Good evening. Good to be here 2 times in a row. That's pretty good. Yay! I'm happy too. My name's Tuere Salah. I'm one of the guiding teachers here. Yeah, so we're going to just continue where we were last week. And it's okay for you that's new. I'll make sure we catch you up, so you'll be fine. So I want to start with a sutta, one of the discourses that the Buddha gave, or a Dhamma talk that he gave, and he was talking about this Eightfold Path. So we've spent the whole year now talking about the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. And we've covered pretty much the whole path, except for the last three. So we've covered wisdom, and we've covered ethical conduct, and now we're working on the mind, samadhi. So this is just something that the Buddha said about the importance of the path itself. He said, practitioners... A farmer has three urgent duties. What three? A farmer swiftly makes sure the field is well plowed and tilled. Next, they swiftly plant seeds in season. Then when the time is right, they swiftly irrigate or drain the fields. These are the three urgent duties of a farmer. That farmer has no special power or ability to say, let the crops germinate today. Let them flower tomorrow. Let them ripen the day after. But there comes a time when the farmer's crops germinate, flower, and ripen as the seasons change. So in the same way, a practitioner has three urgent duties. What three? Undertaking the training in the higher ethics, which is the precepts that we talked about earlier this year. Undertaking the training in the higher mind, which is the cultivation of concentration and mindfulness that we're going to talk about part of tonight. And undertaking the training in the higher wisdom, which is developing the mind, developing vipassana, insight, this ability to see through our delusions into what's actually happening. These are the three urgent duties of a practitioner. That practitioner has no special power or ability to say, let my mind be free from defilements by not grasping today. Or tomorrow, or the day after. But there comes a time, as that practitioner trains in the higher ethics, the higher mind, and the higher wisdom, that their mind is free. It's free from defilements by not grasping. So you should train like this. We will have keen enthusiasm for undertaking the training in the higher ethics, higher mind, and the higher wisdom. That's how you train. That's it. Just this enthusiasm to actually undertake the training. And sometimes, as Westerners, we can put a lot of pressure on ourselves to have a particular outcome. Some particular thing has to happen for me to know that this is all working. And if it doesn't happen, it's not working. It's a strange thing, the Dhamma. The very thing you start looking for, it hides. Won't come out. It could come out, but it won't. And then you keep looking, keep looking, keep looking, trying to get this understanding to come, and it won't come. And then finally you're like, whatever, this isn't even going to happen. You turn away from the whole thing and boom, there it is, right there, right there, right there. It has something to do, I think, with the Dhamma's capacity to be seen can't come from our ordinary minds. It can't come from ordinariness. It doesn't require special powers, or it doesn't require special abilities, but we have a higher capacity of mind and understanding that needs to be cultivated. And that higher understanding and mind is not ordinary mind. An ordinary mind will not know what it's looking at. So if we keep using our ordinary mind to see something in a higher, you could think of it as a higher resonance, we can't see it. It's vibrating at a different level. Like dogs can hear the sound, that high-pitched sound, we don't hear it. Doesn't mean the sound's not there because we can't hear it, but dogs can hear it. And so we are tuning our capacity to hear and see things that our ordinary mind cannot perceive. And we don't know. It's like the Dhamma is blowing this whistle and our higher consciousness can hear it, but we can't. So if you're relying on your ability to hear it, you won't. You'll think it's not there, but it's there. So I want to talk about last week. This month we're talking about right effort, this capacity to this quality of putting forth effort, this enthusiasm for undertaking the practice, putting forth the effort that we need in order to practice. And we're not going to talk about concentration and mindfulness, but the effort that you're putting forth is cultivating this concentration and mindfulness. And so last week we talked about what right effort is generally and about how to begin to see it in a framing that makes sense, that makes right effort not a doing. This word effort, we can mistakenly think, I need to do something. And if I don't do something, I'm not really efforting. So I got to do something in my practice. I got to get somewhere. I don't know if I told you guys this last week, but I remember like striving for concentration on my retreats. And this, my preceptor, Bhante Buddharakita, said, Tuari, you are striving, but you're not going anywhere. I said, I have to. I can't just sit here and do nothing and wait for something to happen. I have to do something. And he goes, well, it's like you're in a rocking chair, rocking, trying to get to the store. But you are not going to get to the store because that rocking chair is not going to move. It's not going anywhere. So you can sit here and rock and do something, but you're not going to the store. That is the difficulty here. Another way to look at it, there's a Zen little koan story where a monk is walking around at night with a lit lantern looking for fire. And the commentator says, if he knew what fire was, he could cook his porridge sooner. But he doesn't know. He doesn't know he's carrying fire around, looking for fire. This is what we're doing. We're carrying fire around, looking for fire. Or we're using a rocking chair to move and not go anywhere. And so the Buddha was pointing to, there is a different way of effort that's outside of our ordinary perception of how to apply effort. When we think of effort, we think of this tightening up, getting our strength together and pushing. But the kind of effort that we are cultivating, that we are learning to use, is setting an intention and redoing it over and over, over and over, over and over. Resetting this intention over and over and over and over and over and over. And that having an attitude that's upbeat, enthusiastic, setting your intention over and 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 over. And it doesn't actually feel like we are doing anything. That's the difficulty of this whole practice. But one day out of the blue, somebody will say something to you and you would have just said all these snarky little criticisms about them, but instead you don't say nothing. It just kind of passes right on by. Not because you make yourself not say anything. You just don't say anything. And there's a way in which the wisdom that you're learning, you're cultivating, and the ethical conduct and this concentration, this practice, the path itself, begins to flower, blossom, however it happens, on its own, in its own season, in its own time. So the difficulty of right effort is, how do you do that? How do you hold that kind of energy? And so last week we were talking about, you have to have this willingness, you have to have a kind of an upbeat energy about practice. It's not drudgery. It is practice. And we're upbeat about it, happy to be able to do it. Even when we're going through difficulty, anxiety, and the body is all tense, we have to find, not that we're happy with the anxiety, but we're happy that we can practice with this anxiety and not just stumble through it in misery, but that we can actually find some way to practice with it. You have to have this willingness to practice, a willingness to keep stumbling into it and beginning again and beginning again and beginning again and beginning again. And this sense of holding the practice with care. So this is this framing that we put the practice in that allows us to not put so much ordinary expectation on our practice. And nowhere is this more important than in your meditation. Because in our meditation, we have such a requirement that it be a certain way. And if it doesn't work this way, then we think it's wrong. We think we're doing something wrong. And this is so far removed from the truth. I mean, that if I could go back in time, what I would tell my newer practicing self is, settle down. It'll work out. Just settle down. Stop all that. I spent just hours and hours and hours fighting with my mind as if I could somehow or another win. And I can't win fighting my mind because the mind cheats. It makes it up. It just changes everything, changes the rules, changes the game. It doesn't really matter what I do, whatever I, it's more of a, like atoms. As soon as you look at it, it changes and rearranges. And I kept trying to fight the mind to get it not to do something. I had so much anxiety. Many of you know, I fought, try to get the anxiety to go away. I even would ask teachers in a respectable way what they thought. Like, oh, I'm practicing working with anxiety. And I just thought maybe you had some tips that I could use to sort of practice with it more. I'm really looking forward to practicing with it. No, I wasn't. I was looking for something that that teacher could tell me to make this anxiety go away. But I couldn't say it like that. We all know we can't say certain things. So we make it seem like I'm practicing with it and I want to just work with it. I wanted it to go away. And I used all this tension and tightness to make it go away. And all that tightness, pushing, you know what I was doing? Creating anxiety, because it won't go away. So I keep having an anxiety, trying to make the anxiety go away. But to the mind, I must like the anxiety because I keep generating more anxiety. So it's generating more anxiety. And I just got stuck in this forever spinning anxiety. Oh, Jesus, if I could go back, I would say, stop that. You are making a mess of things. But at some point, I had a random thought during Seattle Insight. I was at a Seattle Insight sit, and I had this random thought. Maybe you shouldn't do this practice anymore. Maybe you're not good enough to do it. Maybe you should let it go. And I had put so much heart in this practice, and I had seen so much stillness that the idea that I would just not be able to do it anymore was too much. I almost burst into tears sitting there at the thought that I wouldn't practice anymore. And in that moment, I decided, that's it. I'm going to be the queen of anxiety. I'm going to be the queen. People will come from far and wide to ask me, how did you do it? How did you work with the anxiety? What did you do? And I would tell them, I let it be. I learned to be with anxiety as a gift. And I thought I was kind of psyching myself up into this practice, psyching myself up to be with it. So anxiety is okay. It's a good thing. It's not bad. We all like it. We're not going to be upset about it. And I thought that what I was really doing was just pretending. And you know how in recovery, if you don't know, in recovery, they're like, act as if. So you act as if it's all okay. It's okay to have anxiety. It's good. Anxiety is a good thing. We're learning something. But what I didn't realize was that is the truth. Because anxiety is not a bad thing. And I begin to realize that the anxiety was temporary. That I would sit down and I would get relaxed and I would get still. Then this anxiety would come. And in my pre-awakened moment, I thought, oh, come on, I gotta calm down. And I would begin to try to push this anxiety down. And I begin to use all this effort to make anxiety go away. Because anxiety shouldn't be here if I'm practicing well. I shouldn't be anxious. But I don't understand. That's ordinary thinking. Because anxiety is uncomfortable. It's unpleasant. So to ordinary thinking, anything unpleasant shouldn't be here. But to higher understanding, higher mind, this Vipassana understands it as it truly is, which is I'm calming down. So all the energy that needs to be discharged needs to come up and be let go of. The body needs time to shake off a lot of energy that I've been carrying around all day. So here I would sit down in the evening, when we met at Sims, sit down, get all calm, room is all still, calm. And I would start getting more anxious and I would almost have a heart attack. That's what I thought. I was going to just fall over and nobody would even know because they're all meditating. I had such a misunderstanding of what was happening. And when I finally put this framing that said, I'm just going to let the anxiety be here and I'm not going to fight it. I'm just going to soften around it. Get soft, let it be here, take a look at it, get interested in it. I begin to realize the body would shake it off, 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 and then I'd be fine. Sometimes it would take 20 minutes to shake everything off, and then the last 20 minutes, I'm fine. Sometimes it would take 5 minutes. Just depends on how anxious the day was that I'm carrying when I walk into the hall. And I begin to realize that it didn't have anything to do with me. What was me was this mental judgment of what I thought it was. And then I tried to effort my way to a solution that I thought I needed in order to fix this. And really the mind-body system, they're fine. They can work through. Most of what we are seeing when we're sitting is habit. So when we're sitting here, we have this attitude of practice centered around this kind of desire, want to practice. I want to sit here. Just give me, I'm running all day. So just give me 20 minutes here, 30 minutes here. Let me just sit down for a minute. I'm not going to do anything else. I don't care what comes up. Thoughts come up, just like you. Thoughts come up, anxiety, all kinds of sleepiness comes up. I don't care what shows up when I'm sitting because I'm going to watch it and see what happens with that. What happens if I go to sleep? I want to see what happens. How, am I snoring? Can I hear that? What's happening if I'm going to sleep? But I have this upbeat wanting to practice energy. And then I can see when something unskillful shows up, like judging mind, aversiveness, or anger, or whatever, and I try to let that go. And sometimes I can't just let it go, so I have to cultivate some kindness, present moment, find the breath, body, whatever, something that's going to anchor me to the present moment. I'm cultivating unarisen skillfulness, and I am abandoning arisen unskillfulness. Doesn't matter what the unskillfulness is. You didn't do it. The mind just brings it up. So mind brings something up. Here it is. I'm going to try to abandon it. And if I can't just abandon it, cultivate what's not here. Pay attention. Find an anchor. Put my attention on that. And then try to sustain it. If I start feeling a little still, I start to sustain that. And by sustaining that, I prevent this unskillfulness from coming back. Nope, nope, not doing that right now. Just going to try to stay right here. I do it over and 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 over. And I've been practicing for over 30 years. I still do the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over and over. But instead of doing this rocking chair, I just keep coming back, keep coming back, keep coming back, keep coming back, keep coming back. Different kind of energy. It's effort. And it has the quality of moving me forward. But it's not a physical effort. It is a spirit, like an intention, a set. This is what I'm going to do. I don't really care what happens. I don't really care what kind of sit I have. There used to be a time when I was like, oh, when I sit down, I want to have a pleasant abiding. And many of my sits were nowhere near pleasant abiding. They were just thinking the whole time. 40 minutes of thinking about stuff. And when I was coming to Sims for years, I was a trial lawyer. So I'm just sitting here using this as a time to plan out all my trials and how am I getting, and what is that motion going to look like? And that's all I did for years and years and years. And if I were to track myself, you would see, if I could put it out on a line, you would see months and months and months and months of doing nothing but sitting there thinking, depending on what the trial load is like. And then if I happen to have some really good trials, then I'm like basking in how wonderful I am for months and months and months and months. And then I would do nothing. I would come to Sims and kind of sit and wait for the 40 minutes to go by. Just sitting here planning life stuff, doing things. What do I have to do? And am I going to do this? Am I going to do that? And just sit there. And then I'd have months and months and months of just sleeping, coming in, sleeping. And all this waving, sometimes sleeping, sometimes attentive, sometimes not attentive, gradually, just this constant, I'm doing it every week, over and over, re-practicing, practicing, practicing, practicing. Something began to happen. Something began to happen from the back doors. My cultivation of mindfulness got stronger and stronger and stronger. My cultivation of concentration got stronger and stronger and stronger. So we don't think about it, but that time that you had somebody say something, you would have gotten snarky and you didn't, that's concentration. We don't think of it as concentration because we think of concentration as sitting still, arms folded, focused on the breath. That's it. That's what concentration is. But concentration is this ability for the mind to be still. So something that could reactivate it, it wasn't. It doesn't. And the mind remains still. So that activation, reactivity that we can do, it doesn't happen. And even if we know that would irritate me, we notice that we don't move. We don't follow it. This is what we're cultivating here, is the right effort to allow mindfulness and concentration to arise naturally. And that effort comes, the right effort is this ability to practice this returning again and again and again and again and again. So there's a couple of suttas I want to point out. You can think about this right effort, how we do it. The first one is the Buddha says that just as a carpenter or a carpenter's apprentice sees the marks of his fingers or thumb on the handle of the axe or the hammer, but does not know. Today my hammer handle wore down this much, or yesterday it wore down that much, or the day before yesterday it wore down this much. Still, he knows, they know, it's worn down, it's worn through when it's worn through. So in the same way, when a practitioner dwells devoting themselves to the development of mind, he does not know, they do not know, today my affluent or my defilements wore down this much. Yesterday they wore down that much, or the day before yesterday they wore down this much. But still they know they are worn through when they are worn through. This is what it is. You are cultivating a capacity to know something through mindfulness and concentration by knowing what's actually happening when it's happening. And the effort that it takes for this knowing to come is not a physical force. It is a steady, persistent beginning again, beginning again, beginning again. Recognizing something as unskillful and seeing if you can abandon it, even when you're sitting. Cultivating some skillful means while you're sitting. So see if you can return again to the breath, return again to an anchor. And then when you see that you're with an anchor, see if you can stay there. And then you can sometimes, and sometimes you can't. And then you let it go and you begin again. Try to prevent the unskillfulness to come, and you try to cultivate and sustain that skillfulness. Just doing this constantly. One of my favorite suttas is this deva that goes to the Buddha and asked him, how did he cross the floods? It's my favorite sutta. I think on her all the time because she's considered to be kind of arrogant, sort of like me. I think of her as like, oh, this is the way I came to the practice. Because the way devas can kind of show themselves, and the brighter they show themselves, the more they want you to see. And she lights up the grove where the Buddha is sitting, practicing in the early morning hours, so that he could see her way before she got there. And so she comes up and asked him, you know, how'd you do it? How'd you cross the floods? Just tell me and I'll be on my way. I'm sure I can do it too. And so the Buddha just gave her a little kind of short answer. He said, I crossed the floods by not pushing forward and not standing still. And the floods, we all know what that is when we get flooded into some energy, some view we're stuck in, some opinion, some rush of energy. We get captivated and caught in it. And we know how difficult it is to get out of that. So when the Buddha told her with this matter-of-fact way, I didn't push forward and I didn't stand still, she got a realization about the floods themselves. And then she asked him, but how? She was a little more contrite. How did you do that? It's not just tell me what you did and I'll move on. It's how the weariness of the floods, you could hear it in her voice. At least I can. This practice is not easy. So his answer in response was, when I pushed forward, I got entangled. And when I stood still, I drowned. So I crossed the floods by not pushing forward and not standing still. So in a way, the pushing forward is the kind of me in a rocking chair. We can put me trying to get my, force my anxiety to go away. Then I get all entangled in it and it lasts the whole sit. You know, I never thought about the fact that as soon as the bell rang, my anxiety was gone. I never would think about that. It's like I pushed it away. It never dawned on me that the bell ending the sit is what helped my anxiety go away. But so we get entangled in these thought patterns when we're practicing. We get entangled in storylines and thought patterns, and we get entangled in aversion for unpleasantness and entangled in all kinds of pleasantness, and we get all caught up in it, trying to just force it to be a certain way, trying to make ourselves have a pleasant sit or make ourselves get rid of unpleasantness. And on the other hand, many of us just do nothing. We sink. We just get lost in our unpleasantness, and we stop practicing. We don't try to force the thing to go away. We just stop practicing. We just get lost in it. Or we get lost in pleasant and we just stop practicing. Some daydream, some thought, or we just get lost. It's just all part of it. So the thing I want you to really grapple with is that the Buddha had to know he was entangled, and he had to know he was drowning. Do you see this? So that means he was drowning. So he was not doing anything, and he was drowning. He had to see that. Not a bad thing. Because that's how we knew, doing nothing, I'm drowning. Doing too much, I'm getting entangled. And that's not working either. So he had to find his way to this balance of not pushing, not doing nothing, and kind of gliding across the water the way canoes do. You know, if you see a canoe, they just kind of cross the water. That's what we're doing. We set this intention, and we let the intention pull us across the water. Just keep redoing, renewing, reinvesting in our intention. Reinvesting over and over and over and over and over and over and over. Not worrying about what it looks like, how it looks. Maybe it's funky, maybe it's not. Just reinvesting in our intention and giving ourselves time to practice. Giving ourselves, you know, we do like practicing in ordinary lives because we're lay practitioners, but we also need to give ourselves plenty of time to practice quietly, sitting quietly, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever. Because when you sit quietly and you practice, you're not doing anything. So if the mind is getting all janky and crazy, who's doing that? What's that? Where's that coming from? If you are out running about, you could think it, mistakenly think, oh, this is because I have all these errands to do. That's why the mind is all janky. But when you're just sitting there doing nothing, how come the mind gets janky then? Then you begin to see, oh, this is mind itself. This is not even me. This is not what I'm doing. This is mind. So you want to spend time sitting there in silence with the practice, just watching the mind, letting the mind do whatever it does, not getting entangled with it, because you're just going to get caught in eddies and swim around in the same spot, and not just doing nothing. You're just going to drown. So instead, you're trying to set this container with this intention that if I notice something unskillful, I'm going to try to abandon it. And I'm going to cultivate some skillfulness here in this moment that's not present. Like finding myself, if I see I'm lost in thought, that's okay. You're not doing that. The mind is doing that. So if you see you're lost in thought, can you let that go? Can you abandon it? And sometimes you can't just abandon it. You wish you could. You can get all caught up in the eddy of it. Instead, you might have to keep shifting your attention to the present moment. Anchor, present moment, anchor, sensation, breath, sounds, whatever. You just keep shifting your attention to that. And if you can begin to get hearing sounds and begin to notice something about the breath or notice something about feeling present, then you try to cultivate that. Stay there with your mindfulness, with your concentration. And gradually, you will prevent that thinking mind from constantly arising. But if you judge the thinking mind when you notice yourself thinking, you're going to get spinning around in that thinking mind and judging, why am I thinking? Because mind thinks. That's what you're doing. It's just always thinking. So this is our framing. The cultivation of this higher vipassana, this higher mind, through this right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration, it comes naturally with this intention, this framing around the joy and the enthusiasm of practice. So let us sit here for a few minutes and see if we can let all this settle. Thank you so much for your kind attention. I appreciate you. So let's see if there's any comments, questions.
Hi.
Hi.
I want to say thank you for the session today. It has been a really good one, a long time for me. Mm-hmm. The guided meditation was really good. Oh, and the thing you described, so it's funny because there are things that I was agreeing so much, and I just wanted to say, amen to that. But then there were things where I'm starting to question if I'm doing things the right way. So the thing you described, like the dog hearing sounds that you don't hear, and then you start to hear them through practice, like that one resonated a lot. It's like, at some point you start to see things, mm-hmm. that you didn't see before. You start to experience things that you didn't experience before. And like you said, what's crazy is that really it's like, when you realize it, you are already in it, and you realize after the fact that you are like in this experience, mm-hmm. and I mean in everyday life. So,
yep.
Like you have an argument with someone, and you realize after a minute that you have already been letting all those like criticism like pass flew by, and like I'm doing this like, and it's funny because you are aware of it, you realize it, and it's like, wow, this is really happening. I'm like dealing with this like the right way.
When did I get so skillful?
Now the one where I'm. I didn't identify so much as like on the practice. So if I can, I like to describe like what happens, and then you can let me know if that sounds right or not. So you described it as when you have those thoughts coming in, you try to abandon them and go back to the anchor. And I see it another way, like the anchor, like the breathing, is kind of an excuse to get like calm deep and then to let like thoughts arise. They could be positive, they could be negative, but they're just like they're gonna arise. And then your brain is like processing it, you're getting lost in your thoughts. And then at some point you snap, you're like, oh wait, I'm aware of that. Like I've been thinking this for maybe 2 or 3 minutes, I don't know. And that moment, like it's where I like to cultivate. Like I'm like, okay, so like what am I feeling when I'm thinking that, like positive or negative thought? Like do I feel it in my body, like in my mind, like what does it arise, whatever? And I try to not do that too long. And I'm like, okay, that's good. Let's go back to the like breathing. And then it keeps coming in. And I feel that helps me a lot because then when those moments, positive or negative, arise in real life, I'm like, I'm snapping. I'm like, whoa, okay, I recognize this pattern, like I'm aware of it. And it's like you said, like you don't need to do anything particular. You're just like doing it naturally.
Yes.
But the way I feel like the way I describe and I'm meditating is a bit different from what you described, where if you could like just focus on your breath for 30 minutes, it would almost be best. Maybe I misunderstood.
Mm-hmm.
And when thoughts arise, like try to abandon them like as quick as possible. So I would like to have your thoughts on
So you're actually bringing up two things. There is this idea that when we say abandon thinking, that you're supposed to only be on your breath, but that's not really what I'm saying. I'm glad you're saying it this way. In order, you want to notice. I mean, thinking is happening all the time. And the Buddha said that thinking, thoughts, can be a present moment foundation. So just like you use the breath, that's what I hear when you say that you notice your thinking, you notice, is it pleasant? What's happening in the body? Is it unpleasant? What's happening? That is using thought as an anchor, present moment. There's no difference between thought as an anchor or breath as an anchor. What is different, though, is if you notice, like you say, you get caught in the thoughts and you start getting lost in the thinking, then you need to build up enough capacity for the mind to pay attention without getting lost in thought. So the build up, the practice of letting go of thoughts and cultivating the mindfulness and, attention on the breath or the attention on the present moment or the attention on sound is to help you build a mind that can stay attentive to something. Because if it can stay attentive to something, then you can stay attentive even to your thinking and understand exactly why this is arising, and it can learn how to not get caught in the pleasant or the unpleasant, even when it's walking around. So the cultivation of that still or the attention on one anchor is not a permanent kind of solution. It is a necessary part of practice to make sure you can steady your mind. But then, once you realize you can steady your mind, you can stay here, yes, you want to let go of the anchor and just notice what's actually happening. But the steadying the mind is the hardest part. And sometimes we jump away from steadying the mind into trying to understand what's happening, and yet we are getting caught up in what's happening because the mind's not steady enough yet to know that. So that's all you're doing. I'm just, guided meditation was to help you learn how to steady your mind. And then when you can steady it and you begin to see, it feels like, you know, it doesn't take a lot to steady. It's just a constant coming back, coming back, coming back. And then when you begin to see that you actually can stay with sound for 5 minutes, I can stay with sound 10 minutes, I can stay with it, then just begin to see if you can let go and just let the mind do whatever. You gradually begin to get more and more comfortable with it. So in a way, I think that's what you're doing. But I don't know if you're giving yourself enough time to just practice steadying the mind, so that you know for your inner, you know, you feel confident that the mind can be steady.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Thank you.
Welcome.
I've been particularly going through an anxious month. It's quite funny. The last two songs I've gone to have both talked about anxiety. So interesting that that's the topic of discussion. Mm-hmm. And I think I've been wrestling with it in some unskillful ways, but also some skillful ways. And I guess my question is trying to work out what that is. I was thinking, well, I don't want to try to make it go away. So obviously it has to be okay for it to be here. But sometimes the waves were so intense that I couldn't just be there with it without getting completely lost in it, which would just make it go round and round. So then at some point I was like, this isn't working. So maybe I should just try to force my body to relax first. And then if anxious pressure comes in my chest, but it's less intense, maybe I will try not to make that go away. But initially just getting my body calm enough to not go into like a loop, essentially.
Well, what anchor do you use?
Sensations usually.
Yeah, sensations, breath, that's probably helping the anxiety because it's such a, it's our nervous system is really what it is, right? Our nervous system is tied to our breath, it's tied to our sensations, and it's getting, as soon as the body feels something unpleasant, it starts freaking out. So think about sound and think about wide sounds. So see, can you hear wide outside so that the actual container you're using to hold that anxiety is bigger, not so inner, because that inner is just, it gets too loud.
Yeah.
So think bigger, 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 big room, you know, outside, even if you're in your apartment, you're in your room, in a bedroom, and then think outside the house. Mind is bigger so that the anxiety has somewhere to go. And it is your body simply trying to release a lot of unnecessary, undischarged energy. We're okay. Like carrying around like pounds and pounds and pounds of energy from you're as old as me. It's like way back when I was a kid. That's years ago. And yet, we don't know it because it's not like this. It's not matter weighted, but it still weighs down on our souls, our hearts and our minds. And so the body's trying to get rid of all that. And it does have a feeling of shaking waves. And so you want to have a container that's big enough to let it move through.
Okay.
Move through.
Mm-hmm. Would you say, because like when you were talking about, it felt like I was going to have a heart attack. And when that's happened, I've really struggled to not just go into the mental loop. So is there something to getting your body to calm down enough, like some level of not suppressing, not because you want to make it go away, possibly,
no,
but suppressing enough to be able to at least kind of witness what's there?
So, like, think of, if you've been around a little kid and they start crying and you want them to see they're okay, you're okay. That's really what it is. You're okay. Most of that anxiety is our younger energies, our primal energy that's a little freaking out right now, especially because when you start meditating, you're dropping into a lack of control. And that lack of control is very scary. So it feels like I'm going to lose control. And so it's trying to shore itself up. But I did talk to myself. I have mantras. So talk to yourself, you know, safe and protected, tucked inside. I would have these little mantras. I would say, just here, just now, just this. Okay, it's okay. One breath. And, you know, just this moment. And I talk myself into this kind of, you're okay, you're okay, you're okay. And that self-soothing voice, if it's soft and quiet, like you were talking to a child, because that's really, you're talking to your inner child. So just soften that voice and reassure yourself that you're okay, right? So, and don't be afraid to move a little. If I sit too tight, it's as if the anxiety feels too constricted. But if I start panicking and I just stretch my legs out a little bit, then for some reason it seems like I'm more relaxed and it's okay. So you're just doing these little things, not to, like you said, not to make it go away. But make sure you're doing that. Don't be like me saying, no, I'm not trying to make it go away. I'm just trying to let it be. When in the back of your mind, you're like, this needs to go away. That sneaky little, this needs to go away, is part of stirring that anxiety. And you just don't see it. So you really have to let it be, this kind of understanding that says, practice discharges energy. And the body is the only one that can do that. And so if I'm having a lot of stuff going on in my life, I have a lot of energy stuff going on, I'm going to have some anxiety when I sit here. The thing I want you to begin to notice is what happens when the sit is over. How much anxiety is there? Just begin to notice that this is very little about anxiety. And then two, stop calling it anxiety. Because if you call it anxiety, it's like calling pain, pain. Now there's a whole habit energy around what you should be doing about anxiety. And so if you let go of that word anxiety, and I just called it wind in the body. So stormy wind, gentle wind, wind in the body. But you can think of any word you could use that helps you see movement in the body, aliveness, whatever you want to call it, something other than anxiety. So you can, it's very hard to convince your ordinary mind that it's okay to be with anxiety. So instead, you want to let it just be very natural, movement in the body, energy in the body. It's just wind, whatever. It's just a movement here. But it's not anxiety, so that your mind does not have to convince itself that anxiety is okay. It won't think that anxiety is okay. So you're like trying to help it see that whatever that is, it's okay. And then let it move and shift on its own time.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Cheryl, right next to you there. Yep. I gotta see if there's somebody online. Okay.
I think I have I think it's the same thing, but for me, not necessarily anxiety, although I do have that, but I had an experience soon, just at home in one of the meditations that we've been doing, and I just wept. My entire body just wept. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm equating the two as the same sort of discharging.
Yeah.
That's all. Yeah. Yeah. And then I found myself like fighing with it a little bit, but this is really helpful. So I think I can apply what.
No fighting with any of that.
Yeah.
The body needs, I mean, out of all the animals in the world, we're the only ones that refuse to let our bodies discharge energy. We refuse. So the body needs, has five ways of discharging. It will yawn, and we have decided that that is disrespectful in polite society. So we cannot yawn. It will cough. That is total no-no. No more coughing. So, yeah, stop that. It will fart. That's it. I draw the line. At farting, I draw the line. None of that. None of that. Cry. We cannot cry. We cannot cry. And it will do nightmares. If you will not let it discharge it, it will do these crazy, stupid nightmares where you're just running all over the place and all kinds of crazy stuff is happening. So it's trying to get rid of energy. And so in this training I did with the soldiers, we're trying to help them get rid of a lot of excess energy. So one of the things we had to do was yawn every morning. And you had to yawn for at least 15 minutes.
Wow.
And our bodies are not used to yawning anymore because we've kind of bred it out of ourselves. So I would yawn a little bit. And really, you're just like, you don't have to yawn, but you would just be doing it just for the 15 minutes because you had to say that, you know, that you had to write this thing that you yawned for 15 minutes. But at some point, my body perked up. We're yawning? We're yawning now? And then it would like yawn, yawn, and wouldn't stop. It just was like yawning, yawning, yawning. So yawning, crying, do not try to let that crying, do not interrupt it. Just let the body do what it do, especially if you don't have any thoughts associated with it. It's just I'm bawling. I don't even know why. I don't even feel bad. Just that has nothing to do with you. That is the body.
I think that groundedness part of that meditation really pulls that in.
It pulls it in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank
and
you so much.
So that's what you want to let it just let it flow like that. Mm-hmm. Good. In the back.
Where?
All the way.
I've got my own.
Oh, you got your own.
Yeah. Okay. Tori, I can't wait to go home and tell my daughter that if she doesn't fart, that she's going to have nightmares.
She's going to love you.
I'm so excited for this. I remember years ago when I read Pema Chodron's book, How You Live is How You Die. She's talking about these, the hindrances, and the name's escaping me, the Tibetan word for it, but she's talking, you know, anger and craving and depression and these things that we have. Mm-hmm. And very powerful book. And I remember talking to a friend about it, about this sort of list of these things. And my friend says, "What about anxiety?" So that's a good question. Anxiety wasn't in the list. Mm-hmm. And I was really like puzzled by this actually. So I actually sent a message to that Sangha and asked the teacher, like, where's anxiety? What is the relationship of anxiety to these other things? How come it's not in the list? And they wrote back and said, well, anxiety sort of sits across these things. But I never understood what that really meant. So I'm wondering if you could just talk a little bit about the relationship between anxiety and like these other hindrances. The difference, how is it different from anger or craving or these other things that we struggle with that are hard?
So you can think of anxiety as a thought. Just like pain is not listed as a hindrance, but pain, anybody that meditates is going to go through pain. So it's a thought, and that's the difference with it. The hindrances are felt sense experiences. So you can feel the desire, the wanting, the leaning into something. Or you can feel the aversive pushing away from something. You can feel the restlessness of that body, this energy, and you can feel the sloth and torpor. And you can feel doubt. You can feel the body's disbelief, distrust, not thinking, not being able to just feel confident and steady. It's just mind all over the place, all muddy. Anxiety, though, is a combination of some aversion, some restlessness, and this thinking mind kind of lost in the remorse or fear about what's going to happen. It's future into the kind of future thinking. Or pain is like that. Pain is, it can be just emotional. It doesn't have anything physical with it at all. But yet we'll feel it, say, in our lower back. And as soon as I sit down, I got this lower back pain. And as long as you keep calling it pain, you won't see through the discomfort to some emotion that's tightly wound in your lower back. And so that's what I think it is. When the teacher was saying it's like a covering, it's like the thought process of entanglement rather than being in the present moment with some unpleasantness. Do you see the difference? So you're kind of like entangled with anxiety and entangled with pain. Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good.
All right. Oh, down here. Good to see you.
Good to see you. My question, I like your response to her on how to deal with anxiety, to feel to the expanse of sound. How about also feeling like the foot on the ground simultaneously, or no?
No, that's fine. That's good. So the way Bhante Buddharakita helped me kind of understand the restless sloth and torpor side, the desire aversion side, that's this wanting, not wanting. And when you're sitting in meditation, you're always feeling a sense of wanting something different or not wanting this. And so learning to balance yourself between this wanting, not wanting, balancing, and just accepting the moment as it is. And part of the accepting the moment as it is brings this kind of groundedness to you. And then once you start getting that groundedness, you start feeling this kind of restlessness, that restless energy, that what we call anxiety, or you start feeling sleepy. And this is the other side of it, which is the restlessness means you don't have enough concentration. You have too much energy and not enough calm, because concentration is heavy and mindfulness is very light and energetic. So not enough calm, and too much energy. Whereas sleepiness, you have too much calm and not enough interest, not enough energy, mindfulness. So you have too much steadiness and you're like, I'm right here. But you don't have this interest in being right here. So when you start having that anxiety, then you're right. That's what you're pointing to. This kind of bringing in a more groundedness, steady right here. That grounded earth, steadiness, stillness, feet on the floor, all of that.
But you told her not to steady with the breath. Mm-hmm. Is it different, the breath as opposed to the feet? Like for me, the feet work better than the breath comes after the feet.
Oh.
But
I can see feet on the ground. Mm-hmm. It'd be the same. I was saying not the breath because of the sensations and how tight it is. So maybe the sensations of the feet, if you're But even when you're thinking of feet, you're going actually beyond just the feet on the ground. You're going to earth element. So you're actually getting more expansive, grounded, bigger, wider, having a sense of stability and ground. That's that concentration calmness. Similar kind of thing with using wide space and earth. There's a groundedness in it. So you're talking about the same thing, but you can feel it more in earth, in the feet on the floor. And so, yeah, I could have said the same thing. I could have said even earth, groundedness, feet on the floor, same thing.
Well, I guess my question is, does the breath cause, that's sort of how I read the answer.
Yes, it does. It doesn't cause anxiety, but the breath is tied to our parasympathetic nervous system. And so when the nervous system starts getting revved up, which is that anxious feeling, because something's wrong, something's not right, I'm losing control, I don't know, I mean, I'm not sure if I can do this, that kind of revving up energy that can happen, anything that will ground you is what you're looking for. Think of it that way. Because the going to the breath and trying to get more and more connected to the breath is actually just triggering more and more of the revved up energy. And so getting grounded either by widening your view and sound. Sound is actually an earth element. It's a stability of here and now. And the feet on the floor, that's an earth element. This widening, steadying, embodied energy is what you're pointing to. So it's not that you're not going to be able to go to the breath, but you're going to let the breath go for a little while until you get a little bit more stable and grounded. Yeah. So I think using the feet's fine. But are you saying that you have anxiety? I'm not quite sure.
Yes, I do.
And the feet work?
Yes.
Yeah.
But I love the sound too, so I could...
Mm-hmm. Just try it and see. All right. Well, good. Well, this was great. A treat to be here 2 weeks in a row. Very nice. I'm very happy. All right. So we'll just keep going forward with our practice through the Eightfold Path and see what we're going to do next year.